Well, of course, tomorrow's the Sagaki ceremony. And Sagaki is the feeding of the hungry ghosts. It's a, you know, it's a compassion ceremony, is what Sagaki is. It's where one offers compassion to that which is blind to it. And that and the world around us and that within us, that which we can see and that which we can't see. It's traditionally, it's a big public memorial ceremony, really, where you remember all the people who've died in the past year and you offer merit for them. But of course, it's much more than that. That's why it's one of our most important ceremonies. And as I often say, you know, we don't do any ceremonies that aren't accomplishing the thing that they're claiming to accomplish. So, you know, where there are hungry ghosts, either visible or invisible, they come to a Sagaki for help. You know, we always end up talking about the hungry ghosts inside ourselves, because we all have that aspect of our spiritual makeup, of that aspect of longing for truth and at the same time having layers of fear in the way, layers of pain and layers of confusion. You know, those layers amount to a lot of suffering, really. So I'd like to talk a little bit about suffering. And about what it offers us in training. You know, the thing we always want to do habitually, if we want to try to get rid of suffering, you know, we want to try to get rid of the pain, and there's some pain that will be got rid of by external means. If you're hungry, you have a pang of hunger and you eat a meal, well, that pang can go away at least for a while. You know, if your arm's broken and you get set, well, it can heal up and the pain of it can go away eventually, hopefully. And there's some pain that is more deeply rooted in our being, our spiritual makeup, and it doesn't so readily yield to external devices. That eventually won't yield to any external device. And that's why we have meditation. That pain that won't yield to any external device, that we can't think our way out of, we can't just change our emotions, we can't in any way manipulate our way out of, that we can't be clever enough to get rid of it. That's the pain that offers us the greatest help, if we can accept the offering. Because that's one where we actually have to turn around and face it and just accept it. It's said that, you know, we make a Sagaki altar so that there's all these attractive things for the hungry ghosts. Food, mostly. To draw them in with the hope of some external fix. and then to offer them the Buddhist teaching to help them have the spiritual, find the spiritual path that leads to the true cessation of suffering. That's where we really in the end learn what it is to ask for help and what it really is to value the love of our fellow man and the love of God. So is that pain something that is our friend or is it our enemy? If that pain offers us the opportunity to sit upright and allow the compassion of the eternal to flow to the underlying need, the need from which that pain originates, is that pain our friend or our enemy? You could say, well, you know, with friends like that, we don't need enemies. But it's not our enemy. It's not the enemy. And if we look at all those layers of the pain and confusion, all the layers of the spiritual need, all the greed, hate, and delusion that is stuck in those various layers, you know, we have there what we call the self. But if the self, you know, the selfish self, you know, the selfish self, the self that clings, that thinks of itself first. But if those layers or leaves of pain that make up that book of self, pain and confusion, if they offer such spiritual opportunity, then is self the friend or is self the enemy? Ramesh used to say the true meaning of Sangha or contrition is self-forgiveness. And it certainly seems to be that the hardest thing of all is self-acceptance. And to just have compassion for ourselves and those parts of ourselves that are pained and confused. So the Buddha's teaching offers us some guidance on what we can do to help get the compassion to the pain and its underlying need. And it has to begin with not trying to destroy the self or any aspect of it. And then it has to continue with not letting ourselves be run around by self and controlled by self or any aspect of it. And that's where the precepts really come into play, isn't it? If you think about it. The precepts are saying, you know, no to anger, to the indulgence of anger, saying no to the indulgence of greed, saying no to dishonesty, saying no to pride. And it's a compassionate no. It's no to a friend, not no to an enemy. And there's a big difference. No to an enemy is you just try to kill it. no to a friend is, to bow and say, I recognize you. I recognize you for what you are. And I do not despise. I do not scorn. And you cannot run the show. A middle path. Compassion and discipline. Not just letting it all go splat, because then you just end up wallowing in the mud and not being harsh with it and unforgiving. Either with oneself or with others. We see ourselves mirrored in others. In the end, the way we treat others is the way we treat ourselves, and vice versa. So you draw the hungry ghost to the altar with the goodies, and then you point them towards this path. The path of true liberation. It is a path of liberation from suffering. But as soon as you get greedy to get rid of the suffering, you're back making more of it. One has to just walk that path in faith, that even if one can't see it, that in walking the path, the suffering is being worked upon. It's at its deep roots. One of our scriptures says, never come too close nor put yourself too far away. And Reverend Master reiterated that teaching in How to Grow Lotus Blossom in 1976. She said, never come too close nor put yourself too far away from anything. From anything. From any part of ourselves. From the things we like about ourselves and the things we don't like about ourselves. Above all, from that suffering. If we try to deny it, it just gets more desperate. The underlying need gets more desperate and the suffering gets fiercer in the end. Life is set up so that the suffering gets us periodically. And whether it be fear, whether it be grief, whether it be anger, the feelings that are the stuff of suffering, it gets us. It's set up to do that. Life is set up to do that. The koan arises naturally in daily life. Spiritual problem arises naturally. And what's the suffering? The suffering's a flag saying, problem here. Need here. So that need requires, in order to be helped, it requires both teaching, the right kind of guidance, and it requires practice. Meditation, the precepts, the practice of generosity and patience and kindness, tenderness, sympathy, the paramitas or the wisdoms. Teaching and the practice are equally precious. And they reflect one another. We end up practicing in the direction of the teaching that we follow, inevitably. If we change the teaching, we change the direction we're going, inevitably. And practice confirms true teaching and deepens it. you know, inevitably and inexorably. Not long before she died, her master said to me, "In order to have the highest realization, you need both the highest teaching and the highest practice. You need both working together, like the two hands in the gassho work together. One unity, really. Two aspects of one unity." What I've been talking about today, the way that we treat our own suffering, the way that we treat the self, the illusory self, it may be an illusion, but it seems real enough at times, and it certainly has a big enough ouch at times. This teaching about how we treat our suffering, how we treat the self, is absolutely crucial to the deeper teaching that Rim Master Jiyu has passed on to us. It's absolutely crucial to it. It helps us find the way to be compassionate both to ourselves and to others. It helps us find a way to be firm both with ourselves and with others when we need to be. The sweet gate scripture that we recite in Sagaki. And you really see how it is taking the need of the hungry ghost in whatever form the hungry ghost is manifesting, in whatever form the craving and the fear are manifesting, and how it is saying, "You know, here's the path you can walk. You know, here's a path that offers real hope. Here's a path that offers liberation." And we also do the Avalokiteshvara scripture, which is a tremendous expression of faith in the power of the compassion of the eternal, the power of that love which is infinite and of which we are a part, which is never belongs to us. We belong to it. And that scripture, you read that scripture and it's about two things. It's about crying out for help in your need. About true faith. And when you're really on hands and knees crying out for help. And it's about the gratitude. It expresses the gratitude for when that help is experienced. And the truth of that help. It is, you know, the help with the capital H, the help of the eternal. You know, he is the most exquisite voice, the voice that all the world encompasses. The voice of oceans, the voice of Brahma, one that all the voices of the world as much excel. He is a pure light, he is a light pure, spotless like the sun. With wisdom as he darkness all dispels, subverting all effects of wind and fire. As thunder shakes the universe, does he control his loving body and his thought of great compassion, like a cloud from which a rain of Dharma comes as nectar down, destroys the flames of evil passions all. Now listen to what that's saying. We've recited it, so many of us, so, you know, thousands of times, some of us. When I was a young monk, we recited it every morning service. The whole community recited it every morning service. We, in this temple, we recite it on Saturday morning. We do that scripture on Saturday morning. Nowadays, you know. But just listen to what it's saying. You know, help and thank you. You know, help and thank you. You know, faith and the gratitude and certainty that flows forth from what that faith opens us to. And that, in that ceremony we do tomorrow morning, that's being offered to whatever shows up within ourselves or within others. To whatever shows up needing help. Not a help that we create, not a help that belongs to us, but a help that we point towards. And that the merit of our training is used to give assistance to.